Good morning. I'm Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. We're so happy to have Mr. Roger Corvell, who's the co-founder of the 1080 Group, and he's the author of the Virtual Presenter's Handbook. And he calls himself the Chief Content and Presentation Guy. Roger, welcome to the program.
My pleasure. Thanks, Darrell.
You know, the other day, I had the pleasure of meeting you on a webinar, and I thought you did such a fabulous job there. I said, I got to have you on the program. But before we jump into the Virtual Presenter's Handbook, tell our audience a little bit about yourself, your background, your education, and how you became to come the Chief Content and Presentation Guy.
Well, I tell you, I ended up in the web conferencing industry by accident. 1999, and here a dozen years later, pushing my 13th anniversary, I'm still loving it. I'll tell you, I grew up, a musician and thinking I was going to be a songwriter for a living, and I backed into the world of technology and communications, actually back in the .com became .bomb days, and one of the things I loved about presenting and communicating virtually were kind of two things. One, I tapped into that old radio guy of me, but more importantly, there was a very real business value proposition that was available to whether you were a solopreneur or a very large company. There was a real need for how do we communicate effectively live with an audience, albeit when we're somewhere, when they are somewhere else. So, I got my business degree and that kind of thing, but I'll tell you, probably the biggest and most important thing to me is just diving in, learning how to research in a new place where there wasn't any research, which led us to where we're at today. I actually conduct primary research in the space of virtual communications, and that leads to gigs like the training event that you and I met on.
You know, people might wonder, Darrell, okay, now how does this work with leadership? I mean, what is so important about presentations? What would you say to the person who is there scratching their head wondering why Darrell has the chief presentation guy on the program?
Well, you know what, Darrell? Great question on behalf of the audience, and I can tell you this, and I'm sure this is what you see, and you can probably correct me here. I think it was Peter Drucker who noted that at some point in someone's evolution up the food chain in the world of corporate America or working in an organization, that at some point it's less and less about your exact tactical skill and more about your people and leadership skills. So the ability for you to communicate effectively, especially in today's world, isn't just the people sitting in the same room, but how do I communicate effectively and affect change, whether that's sales or marketing or imparting knowledge or skills for training. Leading people, by definition, includes a heavy component of presentation and communication skill.
That is so important, and I'm happy you mentioned that. Now, if I remember correctly, you're in the beautiful state of Oregon, correct?
I am, Portland, Oregon. I travel the world, and I'm always happy to come home.
And how is the weather there in Oregon these days?
Well, let's put it this way. There's a reason it's pretty and green, and if you don't learn how to carry a windbreaker and be prepared for a sprinkle when you golf, you probably don't golf a lot.
Okay. So in this world of presentations, especially for, I have a number of entrepreneurs that listen to this program, something you said was very key, and that is a lot of times it comes the difference between you convincing someone or winning an agreement or contract, it's your presentation. And let's talk about your book. What are some of the key tenets of your book, which is titled The Virtual Presenter's Handbook?
Well, let me use that as a jumping off point and actually share with you a couple ideas the way that I formulated for the next book, which will actually be out here in just a few months, called The Virtual Presenter's Manifesto. It begins with challenging the status quo. If you've ever attended a webinar or webcast or some kind of presentation online, you've probably attended two of them that weren't so good. Now, people love to make jokes about PowerPoint in any context. Well, the reality is when we move that online, one of the first things that we kind of understand when we're presenting is, I can't see my audience. Maybe they can't see me.
So they can't see you, but how do you deal with that to make sure that you're getting across to your audience?
Well, I'll tell you, it's a function of adapting to the tools at hand. So when you present in a webinar or a webcast, you've got your computer and maybe a camera. Sometimes that's the webcam in the camera and some in the computer, and sometimes external. But you've got a different set of tools to relate to, and your audience has a different set of relate tools too. So when you present, instead of maybe walking, looking around the room, moving your head back laterally, you're going to make eye contact with the camera, much like you would a newscaster would. Make clear eye contact with the eye contact with the camera, so that the audience feels like you're looking at them. You also have a set of tools where your audience can submit questions, or you can see if they're paying attention, or the place where you're going to show your PowerPoint slides or something else on your computer desktop. That mediation, that set of tools, is how you can use it like the dashboard of a car. Where how am I going to get feedback from it, and how am I going to use that to deliver what I'm going to do more effectively? And it's that same place that the audience is going to have an experience. How are they seeing you? Where are they going to type in a question? How are they going to interact with you? Same kind of thing that we want to do with an in-person audience, albeit mediated through that set of tools.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And one should rehearse and practice this before, of course, they go before a live virtual audience. What are some of the best tips that you can provide our audience?
Darrell, I think there are four dimensions of engagement in kind of a psychological sense. The first is content, right? People show up for a message, regardless of the medium, whether it's radio like today or a webinar. You know, great content has to be transformative. It has to get someone from point A to point B. The second is that you need to have effective or holistic design. If we're designing that experience, not unlike the way a meeting planner at a trade show might design where the signs are so it guides you in, you can design to better engage people psychosocially with how you design your slides, how you design those interactions. One key tip right there when we do it virtually is to keep those things happening more quickly online than you might do offline. So one quick tip, have only a single idea per slide in your PowerPoint presentation. That might mean instead of talking about one slide for 3 minutes, you're talking for the same 3 minutes but about three slides, so the visual change happens a little more quickly. The third is your delivery. One is to focus on your voice a little more usefully. The voice becomes a lot more importantly, and I'll have to share a tip with everybody. If you put your fingers, a couple fingers, your index finger on your Adam's apple for us guys, your larynx, and you just say, purse your lips and say, from the top of your range down to the bottom and back, you'll actually find that the lower middle part of your voice is the most resonant and sounds natural. Quickie little voice tip for anybody presenting virtually.
Very
that will
interesting.
Help.
Yes.
That'll help carry the day.
Yes.
One final thought. I am always keen in the fourth dimension to say, how can we create social interaction? Whether it's the webinar tool where they can chat with each other and chat with you and you respond in real time, or you use something like Twitter to let people interact with each other, helping people interact will assist in bringing together the audience and create a sense of presence in a world where they're otherwise kind of sitting there all by themselves at the computer.
You know, today I had the opportunity of attending a TED conference. It was TEDx Harlem. And very fascinating, my first TED conference, and each of the speakers had 18 minutes or 7 minutes. And, of course, they stood in front of the big screen, and I found it very compelling, that particular style, in regards to how they really kept the screen. There was no bullet points on a screen. It was really some words or a visual.
Yep. Well, I love TED, and of course, you know, there are people Yeah, Darrell, I love TED, and you know, there's a lot of different ways to present, but I think the point that you just made about being visual is actually not only a useful insight, but it's actually based in science. The brain remembers, understands and remembers things visually more effectively than it does pure text. So whether that's just a pure picture or a very few words on a slide, that actually helps your audience both get it and understand it and remember it more effectively. So that's I love TED. That's a great example.
But what about those presentations for corporate where, you know, you got to give a financial overview? And does it work in that same vein where, you know, people have the numbers, but you give them the highlights with some nice pie charts? What is your recommendation there?
No, I think that's a great observation. You know, data only takes you so far. It is the context or the story or the meaning of that data that is the important part. So, and in fact, that's what people crave. It's that understanding of, hey, what does this mean? If not, what does this mean to me? Second, we got to remember that all human beings, barring some kind of a disability, are visual, right? Scientists, engineers, even financial people are visual. The question is, what are you going to present to them visually? Now, I'm not saying we abandon words and we abandon text, but it is useful, and in fact, you brought up graphs, charts, those kinds of things. Those can be formatted in a way that help understanding, or it could be dense data dumps in a way that confuses understanding. So, again, we don't abandon data or words, but the question always comes back to, what is the story or the context that I'm trying to communicate, and the data is just the supporting evidence.
Can you share with us a situation where a leader did a great job and what tools they used to present to their team, and also give us the opposite of that, where maybe a leader just didn't do a good job in presenting to his team, and what were the key things that they did wrong?
You know, I think of a friend of mine, Ray Taylor. I serve on a board with him at Ohio University. We serve together on the Professional Sales Advisory Board there. Ray is this fabulous presenter who actually breaks all paradigms because he presents very visually, and he usually has people come back going, oh my gosh, that was awesome. And usually one of the things that they don't do, or they don't make the connection to, how could I do that? So he finds himself socializing or leading the change. So probably as much as his presentation skill, it's his ability and willingness to coach people in helping them become more effective communicators that makes Ray Taylor a fabulous leader. I think the opposite of that, to your point, is sometimes when we do bury ourselves in the data and miss that meaning or context that helps someone understand, if I'm going to follow you, what is that flag on the hill and what is the context? I mean, it's a silly analogy, but we'll go to war and die for a cause, but we don't for data. And so I think of the opposite example, I will leave the name unnamed, but someone who stands up and just delivers data and numbers and content and without drawing that to a context where someone can say, hey, this is what it means to me, this is what I have to go do tomorrow, and here's the reason I'm serving something bigger than myself, is a downfall. We don't get there because of data. We get there because of story, understanding, meaning, and purpose.
And have you done any studies that directly correlate the performance of a sales organization based upon their expertise in regards to giving fantastic presentations versus an organization that doesn't do great presentations and their performance is not as good?
I haven't, nor have I seen something in the, you know, in published literature, and that's a place that I spend a lot of time. How I think in many ways people accepted that as intuitive, but honestly I've never seen empirical research that talks about the difference between presenting well and presenting poorly. One exception, in the world of sales, there was a study done about a decade ago that studied the rate of speech for inside or telephone salespeople, and actually found that those that were perceived as the most credible, authoritative, and, you know, wise or knowledgeable about their products and services were those who actually spoke at a rate slightly higher than the average rate of speech. So the average rate of speech in typical conversation is 150 or 200 words per minute, and this particular study found that these salespeople were perceived as most credible and authoritative at about 247 words per minute. The ad nauseum conclusion is not true, meaning go speak as quickly as you can, but in an environment where somebody can't see you, you do want to keep the pace up and draw them along.
And so the rate of speed that you recommend, is it the same for virtual as is in person? And that was how many words per minute?
Well, in this particular case, this was salespeople speaking on the telephone,
mm-hmm.
and their average rate was about 247 words per minute.
Okay.
So I wouldn't personally worry about trying to time yourself so much as if you remember that we're dealing with a short attention span world, and we've got people that are a click away from email or doing something else, checking a text message on their iPhone while they're in your virtual presentation. Useful to keep it moving along and not to drag.
Are you familiar with the book titled Presentation Zen?
Absolutely. I have all of Gurr Reynolds' stuff.
Okay. Someone was kind enough to give me a copy last week, and I said, boy, where have I been? I mean, I consider myself to be a pretty good presenter and try to read and stay up on materials, but I missed that one. This is a very good book.
Yeah, fabulous book. For those of you in the audience, if you haven't, Presentation Zen by Gurr Reynolds, and another one that you might really like would be Slideology.
Slideology.
Yeah, Nancy Duarte, also adept at telling stories visually. Great books on slide design.
And part of your book that's coming out, when is your book release?
It'll be in September.
September, excellent. We got to have you back on to talk about the book. Are you doing a book tour with this book?
Inevitably, yes, though I would have to talk to my business manager, one of my partners in crime, to find out exactly who she's got me where and when. I would love to be back with you, Darrell.
Now, are you going to come east with the book tour?
Well, at the moment, everything planned is virtual, but I am on the road a time or two a month. My next time on the East Coast is planned in September, so those actually might coincide.
Well, I'm hoping that you're on the East Coast in the New York area, because I would love to meet you in person. I feel like I already have met you in person because of the virtual presentation that you've done.
I would love to. And you know what? Thank you. Because I'll tell you, too many people sit at their computer and they feel disconnected from the presenter, right? So that means I did my job that one particular day.
Well, you know,
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, my office is in my home, and I always have my door closed. It's in the basement, so it's away from everybody. But I had it really turned up nice and loud because I was really enjoying the presentation. And my wife goes, oh, wow, whose voice was that? I said, oh, this gentleman, Mr. Roger Corvell. She said, wow, I could really hear his presentation. It was very clear. My wife used to do account development training for Dow Jones back in the day during news retrievals. So she always has her ear up. And she said, oh, the gentleman has a very nice voice. I said, yes, he does.
Thank you. Well, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of practice that goes into that. You know what? In fact, you're a radio guy. Let me tell you this. I actually find people on the radio, and while I'm driving down the road, I practice with them.
Oh.
Do it with Paul Harvey when he did the noon news all those years ago. But when you find somebody that's got a great voice, whether it's a leadership CD that you're listening to or something like that, just practice speaking along with them. How do they pause? Where do they accent? Things like that. Believe it or not, I'm a geek, and that's how I practice and learn and grow.
That is excellent. That is excellent. And for your new book, how long did it take you to write this book?
Well, I'm just wrapping it up now. This one's a little shorter because I'm targeting it toward mid and senior leaders in organizations. So it's less about how do I do it and more about how do I do it but help my organization understand and commit to a better way of doing it, meaning the leader or manager of a team of people who need to make virtual presentations. So inevitably been working on the topic for about 3 years, heavy on the writing for the last few months.
Very nice. So what motivates you to write these books, really against a very busy schedule of being a co-owner of a business as well as being a principal advocate in the business? It's, you know, because you're doing these webinars yourself.
Well, I speak 100 times plus per year, and I often joke, as an entrepreneur, I can work any 14-hour days. My life is flexible. I'll tell you, there's two reasons. One, it's how I codify my thoughts and develop the methodology and the thought leadership in terms of saying, hey, here's my point of view in terms of how I think this piece of the world should look. But the second is, we each learn in different modalities, and you know, sometimes you're sitting on an airplane and there's an opportunity to read and learn while you're there. So this particular book came together in part because I wanted to capture my latest set of thoughts with the latest research that I've done and seen, but more importantly, how do I put that in a form that will reach an executive who may not have an hour at their desk, but they might have an hour on their airplane?
And what advice would you give to a CEO who's an extremely nice person, extremely shy person, and really has a hard time speaking in front of their peers as well as their constituents?
Well, in that description, Darrell, you know, that person, that CEO, if that person was actually shy and having difficulty speaking, they actually might find it more comfortable to be in front of their computer where they're not looking out at a room full of people. Right? There's an old joke that says most people would rather die than give the eulogy. You know, most people fear public speaking or don't really enjoy that. But that person might find it interesting because now I could almost feel like a one-on-one conversation, like on the telephone, instead of being in front of hundreds of people, which tends to make people's nerves or adrenaline increase.
And then from there, do you think that they could build and develop their skills to transcend from the virtual world to doing in-person presentations?
I think so. Honestly, almost everybody, I married a complete introvert, an engineer introvert, who happens to also be an interesting and very effective public speaker. I think that what you have just suggested is absolutely correct. I think some of that comes down to not just our skills of being able to speak or express a thought, but the mental discipline or practice that we go through, no differently than, you know, Michael Jordan playing basketball or Tiger Woods playing golf. They have their own kind of mental disciplines beyond the physical part of the game. And when you get into presenting virtually or in front of a group, there are certain things that you can do and practice and rehearse to control the nerves and to put yourself in a good place and really bring it.
And within your book, do you also do in-person training where you might have an organization that does a ton of webinars and they want their whole team trained?
Yes. Well, I mean, two contexts there. One, do I talk about presenting virtually, albeit in in-person classrooms? And the answer is yes. Second, or a different way of perhaps interpreting what you just said, would be, does what you learn about presenting virtually translate or adapt, and is that useful in the in-person speaking environment? And the answer is yes. Certainly sometimes the tools change, but a lot of the key concepts about how do I get and keep attention, how do I improve understanding and memory, those kinds of things are universal.
Very nice, very nice. So you're on the road, not only doing over 100 presentations per year, but you're also conducting these training seminars for corporations.
Correct. When I say I speak 100 times a year, that means I have 100 keynote or training types of presentations per year. For me, my business model is upside down. About 80% is virtual, so I get to stay at home and sleep in my own bed at night.
Yes, yes, yes.
And the other 20%, so 20, 25 times a year, I'm speaking at conferences or doing private gigs for... Well, I was just in your neck of the woods. I was in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and New York City just a couple weeks ago.
Oh, I'm sorry I missed you.
But, yeah, most 100 plus times a year, mostly virtual.
Okay. And what is the website that folks can go to get more information about your business?
Well, the company is 1080 Group. It's 1080group.com, 1080group.com. But, frankly, right now there's a placeholder there that will point you as we're to my blog.
And... do you do work with Toastmasters? Have you infiltrated their speaking presentation network?
I have. I'm very active with my own local Toastmasters club. as well as National Speakers Association, where I'm president-elect of my local chapter.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
And so if I'm a CEO, or if I'm an entrepreneur, and I'm asked to speak at the Chamber of Commerce or the Rotary Club, and I've never done it before, what advice would you give that person to get started in public speaking?
Number one, be authentic. I think authenticity trumps technique any day of the week. You know, people realize when you're coming from a place of authenticity and your goal is to give of yourself, I think people can really tell. Number two, remember that you know too much. Meaning, get focused on a really singular message and say, hey, this is the purpose of my presentation. Here's a couple of the key points that I'm going to make, and drive those home deep, because it's probably true that you know too much. That's why you're an entrepreneur to begin with, and you'll tend to want to pack 50 pounds of potatoes into a 5-pound sack, as Grandpa used to say. So be authentic and be focused with your topic. Probably the top two things I could point out to you.
And what is the appropriate length of time that someone should use to address an audience?
Ooh, you know, good question and loaded question. You know, I mean, you got to be able to communicate your key idea in 5 minutes if that's what you've got. And if you've got an hour, well, then, you know, maybe you've got an hour. I don't know if there's an ideal so much as this. One of the things that we know in the world of brain research is that people's attention starts to wane after 10 minutes. And so the question is, how could you break it up to improve attention and understanding? So whether that's you pause and you ask a question, or you interact with your audience somehow, unless you're doing a keynote, I would highly recommend, you know, taking whatever period of time you have and shortening it up and making sure that you build in time to interact and ask questions and respond with your audience.
And on the brink of leadership, presentations, as we talked about, presentation skills are very important. And have you ever seen someone be successful as a leader without having great presentation skills?
You know, I think it would come down to how you define successful. Are there people that make a lot of money and are high up in organizations who are lousy presenters? Absolutely. But honestly, most people who really sustain, if not have very happy followers and employees, are all good communicators, almost without exception.
Wow. Roger, believe it or not, we are out of time.
Well, time flies when we're having fun. Appreciate your time, Darrell.
That's right. Listen, we're going to have you back on the program when your book comes out. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Roger Crivell. He is the co-founder of 1080 Group, and also he is an author of the Virtual Presenter's Handbook, and he has a new book coming out. And Roger, the title of that book is?
Aha! With an exclamation point, The Virtual Presenter's Manifesto for Delivering Transformational Webinar Experiences.
And it's coming out this fall. So, Roger, thank you for coming on the program.
My pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for this weekend. This is Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM and streaming on the net at WSOU.net. Remember, leadership begins with you. Have a great weekend.